Welcome to another episode, an exciting episode of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. I want to say to everyone on the panel that your microphone is on, so be careful about talking and having noise in the background. Now, without any further ado, I'd like to say to you that music is like poetry and has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definition. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contribution of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, indeed, vibrations. So thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, I want to welcome you again to another broadcast of Quest Youth Radio. Student hosts Walter Pierce and Justin Hill present their segments of featured historical people from our diaspora who have, you know, flown under the radar and have not been in the public eye, defining for us words that we have taken on our own definition for the society that we all live in, highlighting musical artists who have not only benefited from the community, but have made contributions to our communities in which we all live. Now, we talk about sacrifice, community, contributions, history, culture, music, poetry, understanding. And when we talk about definitions, we talk about etymology. So let's get everybody in to start out by saying, briefly, just good morning. And Justin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. I'm fine.
Good to hear. And Mr. Shelton Harris, good morning.
Yeah, grand rising, so everybody.
And Tanisha Gardner, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. How's everybody doing?
Okay, we're all good. Calvin Pierce, let's get you in here. Good morning. And Val, our number one fan, good morning.
Good morning, Quest Radio.
And of course, Walter Pierce, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Okay. So before I let you take it away, Walter, I want to let everybody, all the panelists on the line know, right? Wait a minute. I think I got you in here. We have the Black Librarian that just came in on the line. Absolutely, we have him because I know the sound of that screen door. Good morning, Mr. David.
Good morning.
Okay. All right, now. What I want to tell everyone is I'm proud to present this information to everybody that our own Walter Pierce actually won gold in the AXO competition a couple of weeks ago, and he is now a finalist that will be competing on the national level. So I want everybody to have a moment to say congratulations as you are called in to make your comment or suggestion about our particular topics for today. So keep that on your radar to give them a shout out. during the show. And so without any further ado, Mr. Walter Pierce. Mr. Gold Walter Pierce, take it away.
Thank you for that. And good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Classic CD Vibrations, live on 89.5, campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. You see, history is like a diamond. Each crystal represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflection of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, my diamond segment for this week is actually on two people, which include Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis. Now, you're probably wondering, you know, why am I doing two people for a diamond? And the reason is because they are one of the most revered couples of the American stage, two of the most prolific and fearless artists of American culture. As individuals and as a team, they have created profound and lasting work that has touched us all. With courage and tenacity, they have thrown open many doors previously shut tight to African-American artists and planted the seed for the flowering of the America's multicultural humanity. You know, when we talk about these two people, we're talking about two people who, you know, met while filming and eventually got married and continued to make different movies and productions throughout their career. You know, Ozzie Davis has directed and filmed multiple films. And besides doing that, he's used his platform and the things that he's gained from producing and filming to be able to help out and be an advocate for civil rights, as long as also his wife, Ruby Dee. So the reason I'm bringing you this segment for today is really just because that, you know, these two people are an example of people who not only care about their personal success and care about what they're able to do on screen in the films that they produce, but also giving back to the community and advocating for civil rights during a time where it was most needed. So eventually, you know, in 2004, they were both honored together for a Kennedy Center Honor Award, which, you know, basically highlighted not only their screen production, but the work they did off the screen together as well. So I thank you for listening. This is studio host Walter Pierce on 89.5 WSOE.
Okay. Tanisha, I want to come to you first. Do you have any recollection of Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee?
I guess the old movies. I just did some research earlier. I have to actually check it out. And I guess everyone could check it out, too. They had it's by Mutu Ali, the producer. He actually produced a film, or a documentary, I should say, Life Essentials with Ruby Dee. And I'm very interested to watch it. And I guess from the little research that I have done and the power that they used as artists and infused with, you know, everyday life situations is very powerful, and how they brought, you know, the intricacies of what we are going through in the past. It should be like a replica for us right now to this day of how, I guess, us being activists, and how important it is for us to continue to bring these issues to light and keep pressure on these issues, and especially with the gentrification of the city of Newark, and how profound our work is in order for things to change and basically change the system.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to go to Mr. Harris. Good morning again. And what is your recollection, comment about Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis?
Well, actually, I I've heard and known about them for a long time, because I remember one of the first plays that I ever saw as a kid was Pearly Victorious, which Ozzie Davis had wrote and starred in. Ruby Dee was also in it. You know, we were a little bit different as far as our mindset. You know, back then, you know, we all had a common cause, and everybody seemed to be down with the cause. You know, now we've been so diffused, and everybody has their own agenda, that a lot of things in our community is not being done by folks in our community. You know, and they were really stalwarts in doing things artistically, activistly, is that a word? Doing stuff for the people and by the people, and they were about that always. Even in the old age, and it was in Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing movie.
Okay, that's right. Okay, we want to go to the Black Librarian. Mr. Davis, do you have any recollection of Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee?
Yeah, I have recollection of Robert J. Davis and Ruby Lee. A lot of the Spike Lee films and black films on the late 80s and 90s, they always appeared as a couple in some degree or another. I recall New Jack City. They played a role in New Jack City as one of the drug addicts that was played, one drug addict that was played by, what was his name? Name escapes me, but one of the noted actors, black actor, not Chris Rock. There was another movie that they played in, but I've seen them numerous times in various movies, and they played very integral roles of elders in the community. Not only did they play those roles, but they actually acted those roles for decades. I hear a lot of great talk or conversations about Ozzie Davis and Ruby Lee because they were residents of the Mount Vernon community for quite some time. So while I'm at work as library director in Mount Vernon, I hear a lot of great information, and I know how people are revered. I think their work went beyond the scope of their craft in terms of acting. They were community-oriented and were selfless in their approach to help not only the black community, but to make they did as best as much as they can to make America whole as much as possible in their lives. And I revere them. But the other thing that I love about both Ozzie and Ozzie Davis and Ruby, they were unconditionally committed to each other as a couple. And if you recall the movie Beat Street, the DJ in the movie was actually their son, who has played a really lead role, and he's a noted musician. So I appreciate both Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. Guy Davis is his name. So I have a lot of respect for the family, their children, and the legacy that they created over the decades.
Okay. You know, the two of them started out in the Black National Theater during a time period in this country when black people who wanted to pursue the art of acting were not just allowed to be in the what did they call it over there on Broadway? The old white way, Broadway? Okay, so I probably messed that up. What is it called? The Great White Way?
That's it.
Okay, yeah, somebody tried to help me there. Thank you so much. Right. But they were instrumental in achieving goals to integrate into the field of acting and the movie business. And I had the opportunity to actually hear Ozzie Davis speak personally. And one of the things that he said that was important if you wanted to break into the industry was knowing how to write. Knowing how to
to write. And when I heard him say that, I actually took it to heart, all right? And to this day, as I refer to from time to time with Walter, people can't believe that I know how to write. I don't know why. Anyway, I've gone off track there. Anyway, thank you for your presentation, Walter. Job well done, Ozzie Davis and Ruby D, and thank you for actually highlighting them. I really enjoyed that particular segment. As we continue, when we come back after this particular song titled Summer Breeze by we had a little Summer Breeze this week, right, by Isley Brothers. When we come back, Justin, the real deal, Justin Hill, will present his definition. So, Justin, get your definition lined up on deck and get ready, right? And when we come back after this song, you're going to, you know, educate us on your definition.
Makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. What? Gotta be very careful.
Okay, and we are now back, and I hand it over to our next student host, The Real Deal. Take it away, Justin, and good morning again.
Good morning, everybody. This is your student host, Justin Hill, on WSOU. It's for my first segment, which is on definitions for Beyond the Word Archive. This segment provides the original words and the meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And an archive is an accumulation of historical records in any media or the physical facility in which they are located. Archives contain primary source documents that have accumulated over the course of an individual or organization's lifetime and are kept to show the function of that person or organization. Professional archivists and historians generally understand archives to be records that have been naturally and necessarily generated as a product of regular, legal, commercial, administrative, or social activities. They have been metaphorically defined as the creations of an organism and are distinguished from documents that have been written or created to communicate a particular message to posterity. And that concludes my segment on definitions. I thank you guys for listening. Again, this is student host Justin Hill on WSOU.
Okay, good job. I want to bring in the Black librarian who does a little work with dealing with archives. Can we get explain to Justin, help him out with the definition of archives and its importance, more importantly?
Archives, it's basically dealing with significant information that you archive that's of historic note. There's different types of archives that exist. And there's different types of intellectual property and or materials that can be archived. For example, if you are working at the Smithsonian Library and Smithsonian Institute, there's a plethora of different types of art materials and canvases and information that's archived there. If you are at the Library of Congress, there's information that's archived there, and it's done with codified notes, and also finding a list of different types of materials in that particular section. So, for example, if you was archiving information in the Schomburg or Arturo Alfonso Schomburg, that would be primarily in the African-American collection and or Afro-Latino collection. If you're archiving baseball material of African-Americans in baseball, that would be in a section of the library, maybe sports or what have you. So archive material is properly housed and meticulously handled in a way where it can be kept whole for safekeeping for future generations. And what we may not think is being something that's considered archival, if you look at, for example, Video Music Box, they archive a plethora of video films. And now there's on HBO, there's a series on, or there's a movie that Nas actually endorsed and sponsored to show records of the history of hip hop. There's jazz museums. There's a jazz museum right downtown Newark at Rutgers that's archived with historic information of great jazz musicians and what have you. So when you archive material, it has to be procured, particularly handled, and properly placed and protected for future generations.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that jazz museum at Rutgers University. It is immaculate, and I suggest anybody and everybody on this panel, if you haven't visited the Jazz Museum Library downtown Newark, you need to, because it is an eye-opener. It is, in fact, a gem within the diamond in the rough, right? You would never know it was there, okay? And so that being said, I want to thank you so much, Justin, for bringing that to our attention. And I want to thank you, Mr. Davis, for elaborating even more on that. before we continue, and I want to play another song, but before I do, I want everybody to know that I have modified my poetry that I would normally do, and I have revised it to an African proverb. I think you would all commend me for that, right? And so
yes, you
while there is no wrong, while there is no right or wrong answer, right, I have an African proverb, and I'm going to go down the line and ask each and every one of our panelists, including our student host, what they think it actually means. And this particular proverb goes like this. Knowledge is a garden. If it isn't cultivated, you can't harvest it. So starting with Walter, what do you think that means?
Can you repeat it one more time for everybody? One more time.
Absolutely. Knowledge is a garden. If it isn't cultivated, you can't harvest it.
Knowledge. Well, what I'm hearing is to be able to, like, expand your knowledge, I'm guessing. You want to continue to learn new things and have more experiences, I feel like. Because if you just, if you're not, like, continuing to help improve or adding things to your knowledge, it's just going to stay stationary. It's not going to grow at all.
Okay. We're going to go straight to Tanisha Gardner. Knowledge is a garden. If it isn't cultivated, you can't harvest it. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Knowledge is very important, but if you don't use it properly, it's just going to go to waste.
Okay. All right. There is no right or wrong answer. As we continue on, Justin, knowledge is a garden. If it isn't cultivated, taken care of, you can't harvest it. What do you think about that?
Could you repeat it one more time?
Absolutely. Knowledge is a garden. If it isn't cultivated, you can't harvest it.
I think that means that, I don't really know.
That's fine, right? But the word harvest is if you farmers go out and they plant their seed, but when they pick what they planted, that's the harvest season, okay? So just so you know, I'll give you a little bit more background on that, right? Let's get the Black librarian in here. Well, what do you think about that particular African proverb?
That's great. So I'm a lead with a phraseology from one of the best, one of the noted scholars. Socrates says, "All that I know is what I know not." I think the beginning of harvesting your knowledge is the beginning and realization is no matter how much you learn, there's so much more to learn, and knowledge is infinite. And so the more you learn, the more you live, the more you grow, you realize even when if you're 150 years old, there's more to learn in life because knowledge is infinite. And that comes with the humbling reality of understanding that knowledge is infinite and it's long lasting, it's ever going. And I believe that you can learn from an ant if you see how they cultivate their civilization and their society. Knowledge is infinite. And knowledge is infinite, and that infinite knowledge is a collective phenomenon that everybody can share in on because we all know that all that we do know is what we know not.
Mr. Harris, I know it's going to be hard for you, but chime on in.
Yeah, well, personally, I think the key word in that is the cultivation because, you know, information by itself is not necessarily knowledge. It's the forming it into something where you can get wisdom and understanding out of it. So the cultivation of knowledge is really the key to being able to reap. They say reap what you sow. You know, you can have good seeds, but if you don't have the right kind of soil and conditions for it to grow correctly, you're not going to really have a good harvest. And it's the same thing with knowledge. You have to always consider your source and make sure you put the things together so that it makes sense on a universal stage, not just for your individual interests.
Okay. Which leads me to say, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and particularly you adults out there, you're never too old to cultivate what you know and learn more because you're never too old to learn. Okay. I tried to get that in there, right? So right now what we're going to do, play something that we all need to remember, and that is, we shall overcome.
Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the corner.
much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a sliding rule is for. But I do know what it was is to. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be.
And now we're back, and I'd like to hand it over back to the real deal, Justin Hill. Take a moment to get yourself together and step up to the plate. And we need another home run. It's time for your diamond segment.
Welcome back, everybody. Again, this is student host Justin Hill. And for my next segment, which is on diamonds, will be on Ivan Van Silten. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. And Ivan was born January 26, 1935, in Kitty Village, Ghana. Throughout his career as a scholar and author, Ivan Van Silten worked to transfer the way people viewed and taught African American history. After completing high school, he worked as a press and broadcasting officer for Ghana Information Services. In the late 1960s, Van Silten did weekly broadcasts to Africa and the Caribbean as a journalist. Ivan began publishing before he came to the United States. In 1967, he published a dictionary of Swahili legal terms. While earning his graduate degree, he published his most famous work, They Came Before Columbus, in 1976. The book introduced the argument that people of African origin came to Central and South America long before Christopher Columbus arrived in 1492. The book achieved widespread attention in the African American community and gave a different insight into African history. In 1977, Ivan received his master's degree and became an associate professor of African studies at Rutgers in 1979. The same year, he founded the Journal of African Civilizations, editing and publishing the journal for decades. The Journal of African Civilizations helped transfer how African history was viewed and taught. Its articles describe early African advances in agriculture, mathematics, arts, engineering, writing, medicine, astronomy, and navigation. And the reason why I chose him was because I think that I don't learn enough Black history, And that concludes my segment on diamonds. I thank you guys for listening. Again, this is your host, Justin Hill, on WSOU.
Okay. Justin, I don't want you to forget Ivan Van Sertima. If you ever have a teacher that says something about Christopher Columbus, I just want you to refer to Ivan Van Sertima and his book, They Came Before Columbus. But that being said, I want to bring in the Black librarian to
put some icing on his cake, and then Mr. Shelton Harris.
If you, Ivan Van Sever was a significant scholar, and he actually dealt with the pre-Columbian aspect of African influence in African history, but not just African history, American, Native American, and indigenous people. On July 7th, 1987, Dr. Ivan Van Sertima testified before the United States Congressional Committee to oppose the recognition of the 500th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's discovery of the Americas. He said, "You cannot really conceive of how insulting it is to Native Americans to be told that they were discovered." The book of They Came Before Columbus, and not just in addition to that book, he actually founded and edited the Journal of African Civilizations, which was exclusively edited and published by him for decades. And this is goes far back as 1979. The aspect of his book, They Came Before Columbus, had led him into, while working with other noted scholars such as Jonoko Rashidi, a chick on the Drope, out of Africa, and other noted Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben, a lot of these scholars was collectively fighting against the previous historiography, a previous perceived historiography of how Africans were viewed and how African Indians were viewed, indigenous people were viewed in the New World, if you will. His magnum opus, They Came Before Columbus, is one of the noted pieces that challenged the history of the world in terms of how Africans was actually trading and having communication and had gone through an exchange in his book. And some Eurocentric scholars had said that his work wasn't noted, and it was actually pseudo scholarism or pseudo archaeology, which is a misnomer. But his work actually changed the perception of our impact in the Americas even prior to the existence of Christopher Columbus or Christopher Colon, or however you may call that particular individual from out of Portugal. It's a significant work, and it changed the dynamics of not just African history, but American history and our unconditional impact in the New World. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Harris, no, thank you. Mr. Harris, we only have an hour, so I'm going to have to ask you to keep it short. But take it away, Mr. Harris.
Yeah, well, you know, Mr. Davis kind of said a mouthful to start with, you know, but just to piggyback on some of the stuff he already said, a lot of the stuff that we, like, learn in school comes from a European point of view, where they were the greatest things that ever happened to society, and they wrote their books and their history books to reflect that same sentiment. And, you know, and like he was referencing Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Ivan Van Sertima, along with many others, you know, we're just trying to set the story straight. And that was a great book. I read it a number of times. There's always more information. It came before, you know, came before Columbus. And there's really more research that needs to be done, and more people need to step up and kind of change the narrative, because they didn't think we were humans to start with.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for that. Right. As we run out of time, I just want to make sure, and now I do. I want to turn it back over to student host Walter Pierce, and for your next segment of definition.
Yes, this segment provides the listener with words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, Whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition for this week is reform. And reform is making changes either in a political, social, or economic sense. And you're doing it in order to improve the situation. Now, when we look throughout history, you know, there's been many reform, either with education or housing reform, you know, things that African Americans really struggle with in their communities, we wanted to make reforms for. And as you see currently in our society, we're moving in a good direction with, you know, actually making those changes. You know, we made a lot of proposals, and a lot of those proposals never went through because they didn't want to hear us out. But now, when we make proposals, have more people that are more willing to fight. And having more people willing to fight and having more people, more numbers out there, more voices, allows for things to get pushed through and allows for reform to happen. So, you know, we have to, even though it might not sound good to a lot of people, we do have to thank social media also for reform that is happening currently, because without really social media, a lot of the information that we're finding out would not be spread all across the world. So besides that, that's it for my definition segment. This is student host Walter Pierce on 89.5 WSOU.
And now it's time for our next segment of Curtain, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtains of the stage. You see, many recording artists have grown rich from the support of the community, but this particular segment analyzes and looks into what the community and what the community has gained from a particular artist. Curtains is a review of their musical growth and history, with the impact of the particular style and genius on the general moods and attitudes of us, the listening audience. Musical and lyrical consciousness, as presented by the artists over a period of time and musical releases, Curtain serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist, and this morning, his genius and involvement in influencing all people's style and creativity in the world today. And now I hand it back over to student host Walter Pierce.
Yes, and my current segment for this week is on James Ntume. And, you know, Ntume is actually a group he founded, but I'm actually talking about James Ntume, who was a percussionist who rose to prominence as a sideman for jazz greats such as McCoy Turner, Freddie Hubbard, Albert Heath, and Miles Davis. He ended up joining Davis' group and recorded 7 albums between 1971 and 1975. He then founded his own R&B group called Ntume, which developed a blend of soul, jazz, and funk that he dubbed Sophistic Funk. Mr. Bay, you can help me out with that if I said it wrong. But the band is best known for the 1983 hit Juicy Fruit, which went to the top to become a staple among hip-hop producers and sampled in songs by Alicia Keys, Lil' Kim, Snoop Dogg, and also Notorious B.I.G. As a songwriter, Ntume wrote hits for a variety of artists, including Mary J. Blige and Teddy Pendergrass. And that concludes my current segment for this week. You know, somebody who's a really underrated artist who's done a lot of great work and a lot of great samples for a lot of artists. So thank you for listening. This is student host Walter Pierce on 89.5 WSOU.
Okay. Before I play this Ntume song, I'd like to bring in Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, he mentioned Mary J. Blige and Biggie, right? Speak about some other people that James Ntume actually wrote for and has definitely influenced. And the fact that he knew a little bit more than what people realize about the music business itself.
Yeah, when it comes down to his writing, him and his co-writer, Reggie Lucas, they wrote like a lot of hits for Stephanie Mills, Phyllis Hyman, you know, along, you know, Donny Hathaway and Roberta Flack, some of their big hits. They had co-wrote those things. And, you know, and he was really more on the business side of the music scene. He understood that owning your masters was important. He understood that, you know, like you were saying earlier, what Ozzie Davis was saying, the important is writing your own stuff. And he was a real advocate of that. You know, he's been around. He did a whole lot in his short life, you know, and there's a whole lot you can say, but it could be said in another time.
Interrupt in 2 minutes for everybody to have a moment to give a last word. Keep it quick, keep it short, and by all means, give the real deal, Walter Pierce and Justin Hill, a shout out. But more importantly, congratulations, Walter, for receiving the gold from the AXO, NAACP AXO. Starting with who do you have? Oh yeah, the Black Librarian. What do you think about the show? And could we get a shout out, please?
Shout out to both Justin and Walter. Great job, great job. And I appreciate the show. And have a great day.
All right, thank you. Val, shout out real quick.
Yeah.
There we go.
Congratulations, Walter, on winning gold in AXO. That's an organization that's near and dear to my heart, and I'm so proud of you. Looking forward to much success at Nationals and in the future.
There we go. Tanisha, last word.
I just want to say congratulations, Walter, and we definitely had a great show. And good job, Justin.
Okay. Justin, last words?
I would like to congratulate Walter for winning the gold, and I think today was a great show.
Thank you. Calvin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Great show, everybody. Last congratulations to you. Okay. Congratulations to you, Walter. Congratulations to the real deal. Excellent show. Keep up the good work, guys.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Harris.
Yeah, congratulations, Walter. Obviously, it's always a great show. And I guess we'll see you next time.
Okay, Walter, quickly close us out.
I want to thank everybody for the congratulations and also thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of CN Hall in South Orange. Quest Youth Radio is
the best youth radio.
Thank you.
Just a second.